And welcome to a very special episode of the Call It or Can It podcast. It's like those sitcoms from the 80s. Don't do drugs, kids. We've got a very special episode. My guest tonight is...
Nick.
Nick, thank you for joining us tonight.
You're welcome, Zach.
And I say that we have a special episode because today we are not going to talk about any particular movie. We're going to talk about the recent developments within the 2009-2010 television season, because I know that Nick is a fan of things on TV, as am I, as are many of my listeners. So I thought that maybe we could talk about a few of the shows that are standing out to us. And these don't necessarily have to be brand new fall shows. They could also be things that have been running for quite some time. In fact, I'm not even sure if there are any new shows out there that I'm even following. A few things are kind of flowing under the radar for me right now. I hear some good things about Flash Forward. I haven't checked it out. I can't say from personal experience whether or not it's any good. But I've also heard a few good things about V, the remake of the sci-fi series, which I think they split up into two parts on NBC or ABC. I'm not sure which one it aired on. So correct me if I'm wrong. Maybe I think it was ABC. So I think that the first half of it aired in the fall, and the second half is going to start airing sometime in March. Nick, what are you currently watching on television these days?
Honestly, I say to people, not a whole lot, but a lot of what I do is like either DVD watching and getting caught up like that. But a few of the shows I do try to stay on top of is obviously TV's Smallville, the Superman show. Young being in quotes at this point, as the series has just been renewed for a 10th season.
I was going to say that show is currently in its 9th season, correct?
Yeah, it's 9 years, and 9 years going strong. I'm surprised at how long it's been on.
Yeah, I'm kind of surprised by the longevity of Smallville as well. I've obviously never been too big of a fan of Smallville. It airs on a network that I'm not even sure that I have, to be honest with you. And it is I don't even know what night it's on. I've caught episodes here and there because I've had friends or girlfriends who have been into it. But I mean, it's kind of amazing that the show has been on the air for 9 years at this point.
I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that it's on the CW, which doesn't have a high standard. That's a bad term. It doesn't have the high requirements that like an NBC or CBS has for ratings for
right.
a show to be renewed. And also, Smallville is a Superman show, and Superman is still a very popular character, so that's a big lure for a lot of people. And of course, they have the teen angst that makes the CW and its predecessor, the WB, hallmarks of that network. So it has a lot of things in its favor for its longevity.
It obviously fills some sort of a genre requirement for fans out there. You mentioned that it's got like the whole teen angst thing going on for it, and obviously there's an audience for that. And I'm not sure of the numbers on it, but you're absolutely right. It doesn't need to do 12 million viewers a week. It can do 2 million viewers and have just as long as a life as it's had, because the CW is obviously a lot different from Fox or NBC, like you had mentioned. I think that's an excellent point. And you said that you've also been following Heroes still a little bit.
I do. When I watch Heroes, I usually check it out once the season, or in the case of the third season, the story arc is over, because I like to sit down and kind of watch it in one lump sum. That's how I did with the first season on DVD, and I really enjoyed the experience, so every subsequent season I've done that. And I'm just now getting caught up, as the fourth season just ended, and I'm getting caught up with its season, which I have to say, and from what I read, this kind of goes against the grain, but I'm really enjoying it, so I don't know.
Yeah, you're probably actually one of two people that I know that is currently enjoying Heroes. I stopped watching it in fall of 2008. That's when I finally decided I had had enough. But I will take your word for it that the quality is turning around, because I trust your opinion. But at this point, I just don't feel like I can go back to the show and enjoy it on a level that I did in that first. And even in that second season, which I tend to think is a bit underrated.
Yeah, I agree entirely, and I totally understand your point. The first half of that third season was absolutely terrible.
Right.
And honestly, this is just my thoughts on that, so bear with me as I kind of go into that. With the first season, it was just such a... I think it came out like the right time. And
it did.
It hit the right chords, and everyone was like, wow, this show is great.
People were looking for the next Lost type of program, and it filled that role for that year there when Lost was when the quality of Lost was on the decline.
Yeah, and I think what happened is with the second season, which I agree with you, I think it's underrated. I blame the strike. For some of its woes. I think if they had a full season, it would have been much better and probably more well developed instead of the rush job that they kind of had at the end. But I think like a lot of the writers and whatnot took a lot of the fans' complaints, like with, oh, there's not enough action, or why isn't this happening? There needs to be more twists. And they tried to, like, okay, this is what the fans want. So when we do our third season, let's put in there what all the fans want. And I think that's what did the show in.
And I think that you're right about that, because I have heard similar comments to that same effect. And I think that heads rolled for the slow beginning to season three, because people lost jobs. Who was it that was let go? Jeff Loeb?
I think he was let go somewhere during season three. I don't remember when it was, to be honest, but it was during that season that he was let go.
Point being, the producers of the show and the creator / executive producer, Tim Kring, recognized that something was wrong with it and at least attempted to fix it. Now, whether or not he actually fixed it, I can't speak to that because I haven't watched it, but it seems to me that he's trying to right the ship, and I think that makes... You know, I think that what he's doing is good. He's trying to reach out to the audience and try and get ideas from them about what he can do to right the ship. You know what I mean?
Yeah, there's a quote that's attributed to Gene Roddenberry, the creator of Star Trek. And I don't know how true this actually is, but if it is true, it's absolutely hilarious and absolutely correct. And the quote goes, and I'm paraphrasing because I don't have it quite in front of me, but the quote goes, "If I listen to everything you guys want, Star Trek would be shit." Which I think when it comes to like television fans, and everyone wants their show to be better. Let's face it. There are some things in shows that I absolutely love and try to catch on a recurring basis that I wish could be better. But I usually try to give faith to the people in charge that they have a plan and they know what they want to do and yada, yada, yada.
Right.
And I think with the problem that Heroes has, they gave in, okay, the fans want this, let's do this, and it fell apart on them.
Mm-hmm. I think that you're absolutely right. But, you know, it seems to me that they're trying to get things back together, which seems to imply to me that they are aware that something was wrong and they're actively trying to fix it. And I think that's important, because you don't often see that with TV projects these days. I think what you said about fans complaining and producers responding to that is very appropriate. And I'm thinking of the example of the third season of Lost, where the fans of Lost just hated these two characters, Nikki and Paolo, just hated them, because they were introduced without any rhyme or reason in the third season of the show, when we already had all these well-established characters from the first and second season. And the producers responded to that by saying, all right, let's just make this total, you know, jackassery episode, which results in them dying at the end. And fans responded to it very well. So that just being an example of that. Is there anything else that you're catching on these days? You've been watching Friday Night Lights, or...
I haven't. I've never watched that show, although I heard amazing things about it. I just never... I kind of missed that boat when it started. I do still watch The Office, which... It's been up and down for me for the past few years.
Right.
Oh, I'm sorry, go on.
I was just going to say, I agree with you. And I think that in the fifth... It started in the fourth season, and I think it was a result of the strike as well, unfortunately. For me, that continued on into the fifth season, and when that happened, 30 Rock just totally supplanted The Office for me as the best sitcom on television. And I know that you're not... You haven't really caught that much 30 Rock, but it seemed like The Office was really missing out on something there. And I've watched a few episodes from this season, which I believe is the sixth season, but I have a lot of catching up to do, so I'd be interested in checking these episodes out and catching up. I will say I saw the Christmas episode, and I really liked the Christmas episode a lot.
with me with The Office, the fourth season I loathed. And I don't know how much, like you said, was strike-related or what, but just something about it I just did not like. I didn't like the direction they took with Michael, with him, with Jan. Things did not work for me on that level.
Well, there was something else going on with that fourth season as well, and I'm sure you remember the whole supersized episodes.
That's right.
When they did that, it seems to me like the creative team got stretched a little too thin when they did that. And then they had the strike, so it was like, oh, crap, we just kind of shot our wad on these six supersized episodes, and now we really have nothing for these characters to do. So there were some pretty bad episodes in there up until the season finale where they introduced Holly, which I thought was a step in the right direction.
But I agree. In fact, like the fifth season, the first half of the season I thought was fantastic. Mm-hmm. I will admit the whole Pam being away at college was kind of a stupid story arc.
Really stupid.
I wonder about that if Jenna Fisher was in a movie, so they needed to get rid of her, or for like they needed to find some reason where she couldn't be on for a couple of episodes. I don't know what the story was behind that, but it was really lame. It didn't work for me. And then they tried.
They were doing some stupid things with Ryan's character. Like, he had come back to the office as a temp, which was totally unbelievable, because he should have been in jail and prison.
Yeah. It was very convoluted, but I think somehow that didn't bother me as much as I thought it would, just because...
Nick, I'm wondering if you remember something. We talked about the season finale of season 4 of The Office, and I had said to you, I wonder if now they'll bring Ryan back as a temp again, and you said, that's ridiculous, they'll never do that.
Yeah, I remember that.
And I agreed with you. I was like, yeah, you're right, that is so stupid, they will never do that. But then they did it.
I figured that they would bring Ryan back somehow, that he'd be back. I don't see them writing off that character, since BJ Novak is in the main cast credits. He's one of the writers and producers. I didn't see him getting rid of him altogether. But yeah, they just brought him back. What they could have done, and probably should have done, since Ryan disappeared midway through that season because he was filming Inglourious Basterds.
Right.
They should have just like left his character out until Michael finds him that one day in like the bowling shoe store or whatever.
Yeah, because they had some ridiculous subplot where he was going to go to Thailand or something.
Yeah,
and then you find out he never actually went to Thailand, and it was like it was just like there were too many wastes of characters going on. They turned Dwight into a caricature. He was no longer acting like Dwight. He was just totally over the top, and I'm thinking of things like him cutting the face off of the CPR dummy and putting it over his own face and pretending.
You know, Zach, I have to say, though, I agree. They started making Dwight a little too quote-unquote superhuman for his own good.
Right.
But I have to say, that episode, like the first half of that from that was a Super Bowl episode, if I'm not mistaken.
That is correct.
Where from the beginning where he like purposely set the office on fire to teach a lesson, to like the CPR scene, that had me laughing so hard. It was the funniest that show had been in a long time for me. I realize it's over the top for his character, but it was funny.
I did watch a lot of the beginning part of season 6, and I will say that I did enjoy how they did the wedding episodes. I don't know if you saw the wedding episodes,
But I
really enjoyed what they did there. I thought that there was a lot to like about them. I do think that the Office has a certain sweetness to it, which you don't really get on many sitcoms. That you do get the feeling that even though Michael Scott is a jerk, at his core he does care about these characters.
Yeah.
And even though I don't like what has really happened to Jim and Pam a lot, I mean, I'm glad that they're together. I think that they work well together. I think that the show had to bring them together. I don't think there was any other option. But I feel like they are just kind of too smug and above everything for my tastes at this point. And I kind of want something to bring them down a little bit, because every time somebody says something or does something, it seems like they have just a little smug comment for it, and I don't like that particular type of humor. And I really dislike what they've done with Pam's character while she's been pregnant. I really didn't like the episode where her and Andy had to go and make a sales pitch, and Andy had like been mistaken for her husband, and she was repulsed by that. I really didn't like that. It's almost like they turned Pam into a jerk, And I don't know. I just there's something about the growth of that character has turned me off to her a bit.
I will agree to a point with that, Zach. During the season where they were engaged, which was the fifth season, I was getting irritated with Jim and Pam. This season, though, Jim hasn't been bugging me all that much. Mm-hmm. But examples like you said with Pam, like the one with Andy, that has bugged me.
Right.
But it seems like it's much less than it was before. So from my point of view, I think the writers may have noticed that and maybe toned it down a bit. But I've been enjoying this season. I think everything up to the wedding I thought was pretty darn good.
Right.
Since the wedding, it's been kind of hit and miss. But the season on the whole, I think, has been better than it has been the past 2 years.
There was another episode that I particularly liked a lot, and I thought it was perhaps the best episode of The Office in the past 2 years, and that would be the episode with Scott's tots. Because it kind of brought The Office back to being about Michael, and Michael being my favorite character, I was just waiting for a really, really good Michael-centric episode, and we hadn't had one in a long time. And Michael is such a great character because he's a complete doofus. He has no empathy, but he manages to somehow care about everybody around him. And that episode just really brought out the best in the worst of him.
I agree. I actually had mixed feelings about that episode, but just because it was so darn, it was so awkward to watch because
right.
You know these kids are like making Michael feel so good because he promised them college education when they were, like, young.
When they were, like, 8 or 9 years old or something.
And now, of course, he can't do it. And
that's what The Office does best for me, though, is that awkward, uncomfortable humor. And that was missing from the show for a long time. And they tried to do it a little bit. I really, really disliked the episode where Michael and Holly broke up. I did not like the episode where Michael was dating Pam's mom. I didn't like that at all. But something
I didn't like that. That was
something about this Scott's Tots episode like really struck a chord with me, and I was just so embarrassed for him. I was just, I wanted to cry for this guy, but I was crying laughter. It was firing on all cylinders. It was a great episode.
The one thing I do like that the show has done is I really, really, really like the addition of Erin.
Yes.
It's a new secretary. I mean,
right.
She comes to this office place that is just completely insane, and she wants to fit in like there's no tomorrow.
Right, and it's like, why would any sane person want to fit in with these people?
And she's just so, like, happy and plucky that she's just such a welcome addition to the show. And I also like... It's a stupid thing to like, but I kind of like how everyone in the office, with the exception of, like, Pam, is trying to, like, force a rivalry between Pam and Erin.
Yes.
So there's none that exists, but everyone's, like, pretending like there is one.
Yes. I want to talk a little bit about 30 Rock and the decline of 30 Rock, the unfortunate decline of it. I think that 30 Rock has been a victim of its own success in a lot of ways. When I say success, I mean critical and acclaim. I don't mean viewers, because the audiences for The Office and for 30 Rock have never been particularly big. They both air on the same night, and they also air along with Community, which I've heard is good, but I have not watched, and with Parks and Recreation, which I don't think is good at all.
I tried watching a few episodes last year when it first came on, and it just seemed like every character was a Michael ripoff in one way, shape, or form. It's like, let's take Michael Scott and his various aspects and make them each individual character, and that'll be our show.
And I've heard that the quality has increased a bit.
I've heard that too.
I tend to believe that because obviously the quality from the first and second seasons of The Office itself, I mean, there was a huge leap there. So mm-hmm. I could see that. But at this point, I don't have the time to try and catch up with it. I didn't really like it from the start. I don't really like a lot of the character, the actors themselves on it. I'm not really a big fan of Amy Poehler. I don't think she's very funny.
See, thank you. Thank you Thank you. I think you and I are the only two people in the known universe that think that.
And the other guy, too, that everybody thinks is just a stitch, and I just want to punch him, is that Aziz Ansari.
Yeah, I have nothing against him, but I don't know what his, like, what the hula.
He's got a lot of indie cred because he was on Human Giant, and that which is a show I've never seen, so maybe I need to see things like those to try and get his humor. But as it stands, it seems to me like he's like making his living off of being a parody of people like Dane Cook, and that's fine and all that, but I don't find Dane Cook funny whatsoever to begin with, and I don't give a shit about Dane Cook, so I don't find his like ironic ripoff very funny. So I just, his shtick is just, it doesn't you know, work for me.
Fair enough.
So moving on from there, going back to 30 Rock, I really think that the show has declined a lot. I haven't watched a whole lot of the new season because of that. I watched maybe the first four or five episodes, and there was a noted decline. And people started to notice this decline throughout the third season because the show was relying on a lot of stunt casting. Like, it'd be this week, this is the Steve Martin episode. This week, this is the Salma Hayek episode.
I remember the ads for that.
This week, this is the Oprah episode. And it kind of reminded me of what The Simpsons was doing in its later years of, hey, everybody, The Simpsons are going to insert random place here this week.
But the only thing with The Simpsons is they were doing that intentionally, ironically, when they would, The Simpsons are going to Australia. Like, it was like an ironic sort of,
Right. But it seemed like there was no irony about what 30 Rock was doing, and they moved away from that in the fourth season, but it seems like they're trying to rely on the performances of Alec Baldwin and Tina Fey to get through the show. Like, they really are trying to push some kind of like unspoken sexual tension between the two of them, and that just doesn't work. They work better as rivals than they do as a romantic pairing. And in addition, they keep giving the character of Kenneth the Page a lot of screen time, and this guy is just irritating to me. I don't like him. And,
you know, I've only seen a couple of episodes of 30 Rock, and yeah, that guy, I want to smack him. And I've seen him on a couple other shows, and it seems like that's the only character he ever plays.
Right. He was a waiter in Arrested Development, FYI.
I remember that. Yeah. I think he played it exactly the same.
Yes, he did. Now, here's the thing, okay? The first season of 30 Rock was all about how do we make this Saturday Night Live style variety show. A lot of behind the scenes stuff, a lot of, you know, writer's room scenes, people doing things at the last minute, people working very hard, and they've turned away from that a lot. Now it's more about Tina Fey's everyday life, Alec Baldwin's everyday life. So the guys in the ladies in the writer's room, the Judah Friedlander, for example, who is very funny, they don't get as much screen time as they used to. And that's unfortunate because, for me, Liz and her interactions with the writing team and then Alec Baldwin's interactions with the whole crew of the show was what made the show hilarious. And now they've really kind of changed what the show is about. And I think that it's unfortunate because it could have been, for me anyway, it could have been like the next Seinfeld or the next Cheers or something. And now it seems like they've kind of squandered that opportunity, and it's just another single-camera sitcom. So I think that's unfortunate. And I do want to talk a little bit about Lost, because it is in its final season, and Lost is arguably the most important drama of maybe the past 10 years, I think that you could make the argument that it is, because so many shows now, so many shows tried to emulate Lost to varying degrees of success. And what I mean by that is the whole serialized drama that hadn't been done for a long time.
Yeah.
Take, you know, Law & Order and its many incarnations, for example. You could watch an episode of any of the Law & Orders from any of their seasons and in their seemingly 50-year history. And you wouldn't need to know anything about the characters or anything about the plot. You could just watch it, and you could fit right in. Obviously, you can't do that with Lost. And Lost and Desperate Housewives, which both aired on the same network and premiered during the same TV season, seem to be the first shows in a long time to try something which seemed at the time new, which obviously it wasn't new, but it seemed like they were the only shows on TV that were doing serialized drama. Now, kind of like in the ashes of Lost and in the path that it blazed, we got shows like which keep up with their continuity, or claim to in some respects, like Heroes. But then we also got shows like Invasion and Surface, which obviously didn't make it. But now we get Flash Forward, which is a very Lost-inspired, Lost-type of show. Lost is in its sixth and final season. It's been planned out. The ending of Lost has been planned out since 2007 when ABC said, we will air this show for six seasons. And the writers kind of had things mapped up, how they wanted to go. We just got the third episode of Lost this past week. It just aired, and it's been back for 2 weeks. They split the season premiere, which was two episodes. They split it into two episodes, but it aired on the same night. So we just got the third episode of it, and I have to say that I expected what they were going to do with it, but they have taken it in a direction that has been somewhat unexpected, which Lost is kind of. You know, that's what it does best. You know, you kind of know what's going to happen, but it always shocks you how it happens. And so far, mixed reviews from me. I really, really, really enjoyed the first episode of the season premiere. Thought it was fantastic. It had a nice balance of new information and action and moving the story along. The second episode of the premiere slowed things down a bit. Not quite as good. And then the third episode that aired last week, which was a Kate-centric episode, I thought was terrible, just awful. It seemed like the dregs of season three. You know, we had Matthew Fox's character screaming for answers and not getting them, and we had just, you know, all kinds of little circular things going back and forth without learning anything new. A whole lot of leaps in logic. For example, the Kate character in her Flash Sideways, as they're calling them now. Had stolen a cab car from LAX and was driving it around LA all day, and as a wanted fugitive, and it just didn't make any sense. I mean, I don't think people understand just how many police officers there are in big cities, and it just required too many leaps in logic, and I'm able to suspend my disbelief, but only so far. I will believe in an island that has mystical powers. But I don't believe that somebody could steal a taxi cab and drive it around in a metropolis all day long without being noticed at all by the police while wearing handcuffs and brandishing a pistol.
Well, you see, Zach, the island had something to do with it. They just haven't revealed that yet.
That very well could be. But
it was the four-toed statue or whatever it is. I don't watch the show, so I'm just making stuff up right now. But
It seems to me that with basically 15 hours left to go in the show, if you want to break it down that way, they're wasting time. You know what I mean?
And you know, if I could just play devil's advocate, obviously I don't watch the show, so I don't follow it, but it seems to me, just from what I've read about the show and fans like yourself have discussed it, it might be one of those things that doesn't make sense now, but there'll be payoff later on the line.
And I really hope that you're right. I have no right to complain, because Lost has given me free entertainment for 5 years. But having said that, I'm gonna be really pissed off if the ending is stupid.
It turns out it was all a hallucination.
It turns out that the entire show took place within the mind of an autistic child.
Played by J.J. Abrams.
Anything else about the 2009/2010 television season that you feel necessary to bring up, Nicholas?
Two things. One thing, I'll try to be brief, and there's another thing that I can't believe we haven't mentioned yet. First thing is Stargate. As you know, Zach, I'm a pretty big Stargate fan, going back to when SG-1 premiered. I didn't see the movie when it first came out, but I did after SG-1 premiered. And now they just released their third spinoff, Stargate, or second spinoff, rather, Stargate Universe.
Mm-hmm. SGU.
SGU as it's being shorthand, radically different from how SG-1 and Stargate Atlantis was done. Stargate SG-1 and Atlantis had a very much action-adventure sort of show where the characters would laugh in the face of danger. It was entertaining. It was just fun. And it was one of the few sci-fi shows that wasn't afraid to be a sci-fi show.
Right.
Like you see a lot of sci-fi shows nowadays that's like, oh, like Lost, for example. Like, I've seen interviews where the producers refuse to admit that it's science fiction,
mm-hmm.
despite the fact you have an island that can mysteriously move from point to point.
It's science fiction.
Yeah, and it seems like there's like some stigma attached to it. And one of the things that, like, especially in Stargate Atlantis' case, they're like, yeah, we're sci-fi, bring it on. They were like, they fully went into that. Atlantis, by the time it ended, even though the show was finally gaining some direction, a lot of fans were getting irritated with it because there's a lack of direction, a lack of character development. A lot of the stories were kind of repetitive and it wasn't as good as people were hoping it was.
Okay.
And people wanted a change. And so when they brought Stargate Universe, it's about as far away from the two other shows as humanly possible. It's more of a serialized drama. It's more relies more on human interaction than, you know, blowing things up each episode and joking every minute. And I'm amazed at the fan base's reaction to it. There's like one half that, oh, this is great, it's brand new. It's another half that's like, this is stupid, I want my old ways back. And then there's the kind that hated the old stuff and now hates the new stuff, but still watches it. The reason I'm bringing this up, I have to give credit where credit's due to the writers, whether people like it or hate it in the end. The fact that they were able to realize, all right, what we're doing now was good at the time, but we need to change it up. And the fact that they were able to deliver this brand new type of product says, I think, a lot to what the writers are doing and how they want to really branch out the Stargate brand. They don't want to tire it down the way the Star Trek franchise worn down after a while.
All right, and since we are we're a little bit past the half hour.
You can cut the Stargate stuff out.
Oh, no problem. I'm interested in hearing about it, but I would like to hear about your second point.
Fair enough. I was just about to get to that.
No problem.
Late Night with who?
Oh, God. Oh, this is going to... We might have to cut this podcast into two parts.
Which a two-part episode?
This is Zach from the Cult It or Can It podcast and blog just chiming in and saying we will continue our discussion with part two of the TV podcast for next week. So tune in next week for our thoughts on the whole late-night debacle with Leno and Conan and Letterman and Kimmel and everybody else that has been thrown into the mix as well. So thanks for tuning in. Make sure that you check out our blog at cultitorcanon.blogspot.com. And we're always looking for suggestions. We're always looking for co-hosts. Please go ahead and email us. Our email address is cultitorcanon@gmail.com. Or you can contact us via the website, which again is cultitorcanon.blogspot.com. So thanks for tuning in this week, and we hope that you'll check us out in the future.